It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
7:08 on a Saturday morning. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, a Georgia gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape. And one way to be more successful is to talk to people who are smart. And I am privileged to have this morning a smart person. Again, this week, a smart person who knows more than me about lawns and grasses and environment. Last week, Clint Waltz, the University of Georgia. This week, Ashton Ritchie from the Scotts Company, although he is retired, been retired for how many years, Ashton?
Now, I have to admit to quite a few years, yes.
Yes.
That's as far as I'm going.
It was a while ago that Mr. Ritchie was employed by the Scotts Company. He still remembers a few things about how life goes.
It's good to see you, Walter.
Good to see you, too.
You're looking good, my friend.
Thank you, sir. You look good, too. Even though it's been one or two since you retired, you're looking pretty good, too. You must have that serene lifestyle.
I have a good living, and I've got a wife that wants me to live long, so she takes care of me.
That's good.
Good, healthy eating.
Ashton lives down in Serenby.
Yes.
And describe for our listeners what Serenby is. There are listeners here who still haven't been down there, never heard of it before, but don't know quite where Serenby is. Where is Serenby?
Yeah, about 30 minutes from the Atlanta airport, probably a little bit southwest, 30 minutes. In fact, it's always 30 minutes, even because the traffic is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah.
So it's always 30 minutes. And it's a community. It's about 1,000 acres. It's about sustainability. It's built around an organic vegetable farm rather than a golf course.
Yeah.
And we've been down there about 10 years, and we love it.
There's a lot of people that live there, too. I mean, how many people live in Serenby now?
I don't know. I didn't do a count, but I think last I heard was 700, 800 people.
Wow. It's a planned community.
Yes.
You know, that's the way that
with
Steve
about 70% green space,
yeah,
and about 30% people. And some dogs and lots of kids. You know, what's fun to see the kids just roaming around in the playing in the creeks and just, you know, riding their bicycles without being parents being concerned about where they are. It's kind of like you and how you and I were raised.
Sure.
You know, we came home for dinner time.
You go outside, play, and come back when you hear the dinner bell
ring. Exactly. And today kids don't get a chance to experience the outdoors as much as we did.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. And you feel sorry for kids that are glued to some kind of an electronic device all the time rather than getting out in nature.
Of course, then Dan and I earlier were talking about pulling a dog fennel from a pasture, and that was my chore and his chore as well. So there were some things of childhood that weren't so much fun as wandering around in the woods and playing with turtles and stuff, but it had jobs and chores that we had to do.
Yeah, I earned a half a penny for each weed I pulled.
Some payment. I'm never sure how much I got paid for picking potato bugs off potato plants and put them into a pint jar. Remember the pint jar?
That's a lot of fun.
With them.
We did that with Japanese beetles. We would fill a jar with Japanese beetles. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, man. Let's go to the phones. We got people waiting on an answer here, Ashton. Josh is in McDonough. Hey, Josh. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what you got, Josh?
Well, I have a problem this morning that hopefully you can help me with. I have a red bud that's in front of my house. It's a pretty mature plant. And I noticed this spring that it didn't flower out very well. And I looked at it the other day, and I noticed that the foliage hadn't come out on it either.
Wow.
And I've got three or four other trees of the same type that are around the house that look beautiful, but this one isn't doing very well. And I don't know if it's just mature and it's time for it to die, or there's something I can do to fix it.
I want to ask some questions, Josh, because I have the same thing happening to my redbud. What color are the leaves supposed to be, I guess, on this dying redbud?
They're kind of a dark red color.
So the purple, probably the forest pansy, maybe?
Yeah.
Huh. That's mine, too. Ashton, I have a forest pansy redbud planted 10 years ago, I'm guessing. Josh has one. How old do you think yours is, Josh?
Oh, I bought it with the house. I've been there 5 years. It's probably 12 inches in diameter. I don't know if that gives you some idea of how old it is.
So mine this year, I noticed Ashton is not leafing out very well at all. It might have 30% is closer to it of the foliage it should have on it. Josh, his doesn't look good at all.
We have three of those, and one of ours is a little bit slower to leaf out than the other ones. But there's some others in the neighborhood that look great.
Yeah,
two of ours look great. You know,
what's our theory, Mr. Ritchie?
I don't see anything going on with them.
No.
And they both are planted high enough that you know they're not planted too deep.
Right.
And we had plenty of rain last year.
Yes.
So, you know, all those things would point to
healthy, but you flourishing know, redwood. Sure.
When my wife wants to plant one of these plants that has the more unusual foliage,
yeah,
I always tell her that, you know, that's probably going to be the one that's going to have some problems to it. You know, the typical red bud is not the red leaves.
Yeah.
And so I don't know whether, you know, you just got to expect some of those are just going to go south on you after a while. You know,
they're the ones we paid money for, Ashton.
I know.
Somebody paid money for that red bud
variegated,
in Josh's lawn.
Yeah, variegated. You know, all these plants that sometimes they just don't, they need a little something extra, and sometimes I just don't know what the answer is. So, I'm going to tell you, I don't know.
To summarize, Josh, he don't know, and I don't know either what's going on with redbuds, but I got it too. And until we see something definitive going on, as Ashton said, going on with redbuds, we don't have an answer for
there's
you.
Yeah, there's no disease or any insect that I know
of.
But,
noticed.
But feed it.
Feed it.
Okay.
Feed
it. I can certainly do that.
How many leaves? It doesn't have any leaves on yours, Josh.
No, but feed it. I mean, you haven't lost anything by putting a little plant food. Plant food is not going to cost you anything. I mean,
give it a little slow release plant food.
And I love the Osmocote. I tell you,
works,
I'm a real big fan of Osmocote.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Just
feed
spread
it.
Just spread around the drip zone and
let's see
and while
what
you at it, feed all three of them.
Yeah, right. Give all of them. And if you come to my house and Ashton's house and take care of us as well, let us know. Give us some updates in about 6 months, Josh, and let's just see what happened with the redbud because we're curious. We don't see anything particularly going on, but I've got one. You've got one. Why the forest pansy redbud affected? I don't know. I spent $125 on my nice rising sun. Speaking of Rita Ritchie and her great-looking plants that you plant, and you warn her that they're probably the ones that'll die. My rising sun had better survive. I spent good money for that. I want a good-looking thing. All right, let's go to Nancy. Nancy's in Sandy Springs. Hey, Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to speak to your how some person's weeds or another person's or animal's flower. The fennel is also the host plant for black swallowtail.
There you go.
Well, dog fennel is a different plant completely, but fennel,
so
you're right.
Fennel would not also be them.
Yeah, maybe
okay.
so. But
okay.
So I know that fennel certainly is the aromatic fennel, the one you use for cooking.
What you use for cooking. Or parsley.
That's my dad, but the passion flower vine, which drives some people nuts, it's for our Gulf fritillary. So weeds or someone else's flower, right.
And, you know, that is another example, Nancy. I started by this morning by mentioning a list of plants that could be a flower in some people's eyes and a weed in others. Morning glory, certainly one that people don't like particularly, but maypop, the passion vine that has a little fruit on it. I love to throw them, so a great ammunition for her children to throw. On the other hand, my father, again, would tell me to go up in the garden and hoe all the maypop vines out because it would get on the tomatoes, it would climb up over the beans, it would climb up over the corn. And so you did not want passion vine in your garden, even though we did love to throw them at each other.
Yeah, a dandelion to the wine connoisseur is
sure,
probably pretty good.
Dandelion wine. Eat the greens wine. Or dandelions are edible, certainly very edible.
Dandelion in the lawn is probably not as, you know, a lot of not bad to a lot of people. I mean, it's a yellow flower.
Yeah.
But a dandelion with the seed heads growing into your Pachysandra or your beds, you know, you think, gosh, how am I going to get that out of there?
Dig it out.
But I imagine that our butterflies survive on all of our weeds. So.
Well, I think you're exactly right, Nancy. Yeah. You make a very good point that butterflies and other pollinators, but all insects deserve and like to have a varied food palate. In other words, you can't just feed them on passion vine, you can't just feed them on fennel. But if you have a varied palate, you end up having more diversity, which is what we want in our landscapes. More diversity is good for our landscape. And the more different kinds of plants, more different shapes of flowers, the more different sizes of stem, all those things go into a diverse landscape, and that's exactly what we need more of.
All right. Thank you.
Nancy, thank you for letting us unload, and thank you for helping us to unload on that subject. It's 7:18 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves and the lawn and garden advice you need.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something will
a lot of sunshine today. A quick weather update brought to you by Finley Roofing. Today, there's a very good chance of thundershowers during the day. High of 82 today, low of 65 overnight. Tomorrow, scattered showers, high of 80, low of 58. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Ashton, you were too polite to mention, but neither of us are wearing many clothes today. We're celebrating World Naked Gardening Day here at WSB, but also all over the world where gardeners are gardening sans culottes, sans clothing.
15th annual.
15th annual.
And first of all, I appreciate the fact that the air conditioner's not set as low this year as it was last year.
Nice and warm.
Yeah, because it was pretty daggone cold in here last year.
Chilly.
And I think a lot of folks that are big fans of yours will be happy to know that your green thumb extends all the way up your arm and to other parts of your body.
Indeed.
So, you know,
it's wonderful to...
they've known you as a green thumb for years, but they probably didn't know the other about you.
And Ashton yourself, you're sort of greenish all over the part that isn't blue and purple right now in the studios. Well, World Naked Gardening Day is one that anyone can celebrate. It does not require any effort on your part. In fact, it requires less effort on your part than any other type of gardening. And if you'd like to see if Ashton and myself do celebrate, you can go to my website, which is worldnakedgardeningday.com, and you will see pictures of Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Reeves.
WalterReeves.com, WalterReeves.com.
Right in there, too.
It's right there, and there's pictures of both of us, plus some of your listeners who participated in this in the past.
It sends pictures in as well, plus the good people up in Paradise Valley in North Georgia, the naturist camp up there. They sent some pictures of their gardening club. And so if you want to know more about this holiday, again, the first Saturday in May, it is
every year, and there's people all over all over Atlanta scrambling to the internet right now to go to WalterReeves.com.
One who can is David in Buckhead because he has to be on the phone with us. Hey, David, good morning.
Well, I'm going to pluck my eyes out.
Yeah, you can't unsee this. You can't unsee what's going on right now.
You can't erase a memory, apparently. No, my question is: 2 years ago in the wintertime, some of my camellias got really bent over by the snow. And then this year when they came back out, that plant was probably 30 to 40% covered by galls.
Wow.
So I had to cut a whole bunch of stuff out of that one. I mean, I've got a lot of galls kind of in this one hedge, and I'm trying to figure out, other than manually cutting them out, is there something I can do to help prevent them or minimize them?
Now, camellia leaf gall, the one that makes the leaves swell up for listeners who've never had it before, it'll make the leaves on a camellia totally gnarly, swollen, grotesque is a good word to describe them. And the only prevention you have, David, is to pluck them off, put them in a bucket, put them in a compost pile, or get rid of them, I guess is better. Because the fungicides don't seem to be very effective at preventing it, just plucking them out before it gets infective is the best thing you can do.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if there's any kind of association between the damage you had from the snow and ice onto your camellias. Ashton, can you think of anything of why ice would do anything?
No, not at all.
Not in me either.
Well, you know, of course, in the winter, you know, you could prune pretty heavily and at least a third of the plant. And you could get a lot of new growth. Clean up growth.
Mess up your flowers.
And then the leaves that fall on in the that fall on the ground, pick those up.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's 7:28 at News Talk WSB. Ashton Ritchie here, celebrating World Naked Gardening Day, as well as giving you advice on your garden and your lawn. 404-872-0750. We'll be back after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
7:36 on a Saturday morning, 69 degrees outside. This is Lawn and Garden. I'm Walter Reeves, the Georgia Gardener, here to help you be more successful in your landscape. Now, all you got to do is take a little bit of advice, based research, not on the internet, not on weird things that people post over the internet about dish soap and peroxide and crazy things like that. We're basing our advice on research, things that really do work. Our advice comes from myself and Mr. Ashton Ritchie. Ashton used to work for the Scotts Company, so knows a little bit about lawns, and we'll talk about lawns.
And I'm an old county extension agent,
too. Old county extension agent, just
from years
like
ago.
Me. Right, right. So we both have similar experience in the horticultural business. Let's go to the phones. John's out in Juliet, Georgia, and joins us. Hey, John, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, John, what's up?
I purchased a home that has sat for a long time, and it has some rose bushes on each side of my porch, but they're more like trees now. There's a long stem with the big thorns on them, you know, the big bushy rose. I don't know what the name of them are. I'm not a rose person.
Okay.
And my wife doesn't want to get rid of them, but we don't know how to take care of them.
All right. Then have they bloomed already or getting started blooming? What's going on?
They're blooming, and there's new fresh buds on the plant right now.
Yeah.
And I'm on both sides of my porch, and I mean, they're as tall as the house.
Wow. Not knowing exactly which ones you have, I would say in general, what you do for rose pruning and maintenance is to wait till after they flower. You're a flower now, so you got a couple of weeks to wait. And then you can, just about every rose I have ever maintained, John, you could prune it to within an inch of its life, and it will still come back and bloom the next year just fine. And so if you need to take big canes off of yours, need to make, you know, one out of three or something that keeps it off the top of the porch or something like that, go ahead and do it. Don't be scared to prune a rose. Generally speaking, they come back gangbusters.
Okay. We didn't want to kill them because the flowers are, they're extremely beautiful-looking flowers coming up on the bush. They're just really wild looking right now. They're not, the plant's not appealing, just the flowers.
Online, John, there are several rose societies and rose identification resources. So if you want to take a picture of the flowers, now it's on your rose bush, take several pictures of the flowers and submit them to the rose societies and just say, what do you think this is? You may get some ideas of what they are and be able to know what it is and get a little bit better, more accurate care instructions for it, for what needs to be done to it to prune it correctly. Chad is in Roswell, Georgia. Hey, Chad, good morning. Yo, Chad. Hey, good morning. Chad. I'll put Chad back on hold because Chad's not listening to us, so let's talk to Debbie and Marietta instead. Hey, Debbie, good morning.
Oh.
Hey, Deb. Hey, good morning.
How you doing?
Doing fine. What's your question, Deborah?
Okay. We are in the process today of seeding Bermuda on our lawn.
Okay.
We actually had some trees cut to get some more sunlight on the lawn just recently. So anyway, we got all the seed, and we're mixing some seed with sand.
Great, yeah. But
the sand is kind of wet, but just wanted to ask about that. You have any advice about that?
Mr. Ritchie, what do you think?
Well, you know, you can do that because the seeds are very, very small. But, you know, I'm familiar, I've worked for the Scotts Company. So if you got the Scotts Bermuda seed, you would just follow the spreader setting that was on the package, and you really wouldn't have to mix it up. And you just spread it down there, and you're doing it at the right time. But I would definitely put a starter lawn food down with it, especially if you took some trees down, and maybe if they chipped the stumps and they left some wood chips down in there that are decomposing, I think you could probably need some extra nutrition. So I would put a starter lawn food down with the seed And
okay.
How much seed, how much Bermuda seed are you going to put down, Debbie?
How much seed? We got a 50-pound bag. I don't know.
Whoa. Oh, wow. That's a Bermuda seed?
Big area.
Yeah, really. How much area are you planting?
It's a corner lot. It's not that big of a lot. My husband was like, let me just...
Debbie, how much did you pay for 50 pounds of Bermuda seed? Are you sure it's a 50-pound bag of Bermuda seed? That would be hundreds of dollars.
He paid $300 for it.
Oh, wow.
$330.
I don't think you need that much Bermuda seed. Off the top of my head, Ashley, could you remember what the seeding rate for Bermuda is?
You know, I can't. I'm thinking it's a couple of pounds.
Yeah,
of pounds per 1,000 square feet.
Yeah, it's not much at all.
Yeah.
And
so that's maybe enough to do a couple, maybe a little over an acre.
So, Debbie, one of the things you can run into when you plant too many seed in one small space is the seed crowd each other together and you get diseases that run through it. And I don't want you to have diseases. So one of the things I'm going to suggest is you either read the bag and see what it says for the suggested seeding rate, or I'm going to real quickly in a minute when the break comes, look it up and find out exactly how much seed you should put out per 1,000 square feet. Your job, Debbie, is to figure out how many 1,000 square feet you have by measuring your lawn area. And with the two bits of information, how much seed to put out, how much lawn area you have, then you'll know what to put out. But you've already started, I think, correctly by adding the seed to the sand. I wish the sand were dry. It'll do better if it's dry. It's easier to mix that way. But that was the right way to start. And Ashley, I think, made good advice, too, of putting a starter fertilizer out at the same time to get the seeds, give it a little bit of nitrogen to get it started and up and going real quickly.
Okay. All right.
All right, so you do your homework. I'll do my homework, and we'll figure out how much Bermuda seeds can be put out and should be put out to make it healthy and not spend $330 on a 50-pound. Ooh, gracious. Heavens to Betsy. Let's talk to Sandra and Marietta then. Sandra, you're on News Talk WSB. Hey, Sandra. Good morning.
Good morning, Walter. So good to talk to you. We are so sad. Our fig tree's been in the ground 3 or 4 years. We had figs everywhere last year.
Yeah.
And all we have now is wilted leaves.
Ashley, not Ashton, but Ashley, my lovely call screener, just pointed out to me a picture of a lady who had a peach tree. And in the peach tree trunk, what did she say she had, Ashley?
They looked like pencil lead-sized toothpicks coming out of the trunk.
And the symptom that I think would happen on a peach tree with pencil lead thick toothpicks coming out of the trunk would be the leaves would wilt. And I'm wondering if your fig has the same thing. Have you looked on the trunk to see, Sandra, if you have any toothpicks coming out of your fig trunk?
Yes, we have. We've had them before, and we have survived.
Have we had the same thing?
They were not there. No fungus, no holes in the leaves. They came out beautifully. Yeah. Nothing that we can recognize.
Well,
no toothpicks.
The toothpicks, though, infected originally when they whenever they were in the trunk, they infected the trunk with a fungus, and that fungus can grow quickly or can grow slowly, but eventually the fungus conquers everything beyond that point, and no moisture can get out to the leaves, and that's why the leaves are wilted.
Will the trees survive?
But not the part that's wilted. Very likely the fungus will clog everything up beyond that point, and it'll just die. You won't have any leaves growing there. But below that point, what happened to you?
We pruned off all of the branches and got rid of them. Didn't leave them laying around or throw them nearby. We read your WalterReeves.com advice on your website. Got rid of them. And the plant looks good now. I mean, good. But that was...
Well, we'd be down to a stump.
Yeah, that's what happened to us. And we And then the new growth... You know, we didn't have any figs.
Yeah.
I won't have any tree.
Yeah.
Eventually you will. A couple of years from now, you will, Sandra. But
yeah,
not this year.
Yeah, that's what happened to us.
Walter, I'm in my 80s. How long can I wait?
Well, you know, you're still not too old. You can still buy the green bananas and it'll be fine for you, Sandra. So you just have to wait and see how long it takes before it starts bearing figs. But If the leaves are wilted right now, Sandra, I feel pretty confident with if you had the toothpicks in years previous,
yeah.
You had Asian ambrosia beetle infestation, and that generally is fatal to the part of the plant beyond where the toothpicks came out. Below that point, like Ashton, it'll leaf back out again and regrow a fig tree.
Okay, shall do. Thank you so much for your help.
Great. Great talking to you, Sandra. Thanks so much for calling. Houston is in Braselton and joins us on Lawn and Garden. Houston, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, man, we're fine. We've got about a minute, Houston, so let's go ahead and get Ashton working here.
All right. Basically, what I got going on is I have a yard that was had Bermuda sod put out when the sod was dormant. The contractor overseeded with fescue, and I'm having an awful time getting the fescue out of the Bermuda. I've cut it short, continue cutting it short, but I'm still having a hard time allowing my Bermuda to thrive and eventually take over that fescue.
Okay, I know we don't have much time, but you're doing the right thing to cut it short, like, setting the lawnmower maybe at an inch and a half or an inch after the cut.
Yeah, fescue hates that.
Fescue doesn't like that. And then also, I would do maybe 3 or 4 feedings on your Bermudas. Do it now
and
make it nice and thick. And the fescue won't like the summer feeding.
No.
And don't feed it in the fall. Fescue likes a couple of feedings in the fall.
Don't
and not that. A lot in the summer, so don't do that. And that way you'll be favoring your Bermuda grass. So put your last feeding down into August, first part of September.
Okay. Is there any type of weight that you would recommend or periods of those feedings?
Yeah, do it about every 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. How many pounds of nitrogen would you put down per 1,000?
Okay. Well, each feeding will be around 1 pound. So, like, for example, and you know, I did work for the Scotts Company. If you got the Scotts Turf Builder and you put it down at the regular feeding rate, you'll be right on the money. You don't even have to do any calculation, and it's going to give you a slow feeding for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
So you can basically, you can figure out, Houston, you already know about the 1 pound per 1,000 rate, but you can figure that out mathematically, just divide the first number into 100, which gives you the number of pounds per 1,000, and get the Bermuda grass fed 4 times during the summertime. Don't feed the fescue, mow it low, and you're favoring the Bermuda over the fescue, and hopefully that'll choke it out.
And if it's full sun, you're on the money.
Yeah, sure are. It's 7:48 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after this.
This is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News on WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be here Monday morning, 4:30 till 9, for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves.
It's just a garden in the rain, close to a little leafy lane, a touch of color neath skies.
And a quick weather update brought to you by Findlay Roofing. Chance of thunderstorms today, chance of a little bit of rain today, possibly beginning around midday. High of 82, low of 65. Tomorrow, scattered showers, high of 80, low of 58. The full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Chad is out in Roswell. Chad joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Chad, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
You bet. How can we help, Chad?
I've got two questions. My first one is most important one is I got Zorgia. It's Empire Zorgia.
Okay.
I real mow it, take good care of it, get it treated all the time. What is the best time to aerate in top dress? What month?
Okay, Walter's pointing at me.
Which means you answer this one, Ashton.
Anytime it's actively growing, I mean, you can definitely aerate it now and top dress it now, that's for sure. The only thing I would point out is if a pre-emergent was put down earlier by whoever's treating your lawn or if you did it, then when you core aerate, you will break that barrier. But if you didn't have crabgrass and, you know, it sounds like you've got a nice thick Zorgia lawn, so it's likely you probably didn't have some crabgrass or much crabgrass in there, I wouldn't be too concerned. But if you had a lot of annual weeds like crabgrass in there and the pre-emergent was already put down, you might need to reapply that after you've core aerated.
Yeah, they've sprayed it twice this year. The crabgrass is brown, pretty much dead at this point.
Okay. So anytime now, you can definitely core aerate and top dress.
What's your second question?
I've done it every year. I did not do it last year, and I can tell that it needs it this year. So, and my other small question is, I've got I think it's called a Japanese maple, that really pretty tree that doesn't grow very tall. It's in my front of my house, and it's gotten so big now it's impeding the walkway, but it's too pretty to cut.
Yeah.
I mean, when should I trim that back? Is that in the fall?
No, you can do some trimming now. There's probably a little bit less you'd do now in the growing season than would be in the wintertime when it doesn't have any leaves on it. But sure, you can prune a Japanese maple now. Some of the aesthetics of pruning a Japanese maple require you to take a little bit of time, Chad, basically just to walk around the tree. Maybe if you have somebody else in the family who can walk around with you and agree on which limb to take off here, which limb to take off there, maybe this one over here, put a red ribbon around it before you make the cut. And once you've made the cut, you then determine what's the next limb you want to take off. Don't do it all in one big 15-minute whack. Don't take a chainsaw to it, but very individually and with thought beforehand. And you can make a very nice-looking maple tree and make it smaller than it is now. And I don't think you would hurt it particularly by pruning 25% ease of the foliage you can take off without hurting it, I think. 25% would be all I would try during the growing season, though.
Okay. Well, awesome, guys. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great talking to you. Thanks so much for calling. 404-872-0750 is the number. On Lawn and Garden, Ashton Ritchie here from the Scotts Company. I'll be back. We'll be back after news.